So before we say the prayers, you can think of the Buddha and the space before you. Very classically, traditionally, they say it's about, you can imagine the Buddha image about an arm's length in front of you, about the level of your forehead, image made of light, made of your pure creative energy, your creative mind. So you can think of the Buddha image that way. Think of the Buddha as enlightened consciousness. Generally, you know, we think of the form in the classic tradition as in this central figure here of the historical Buddha, who has his right hand in the earth-touching gesture, and his left hand is in his lap holding the monk's bowl. And he sits in like a meditative position. So you can imagine that image that way, or you can think of His Holiness the Dalai Lama or your spiritual mentor in the space before you. So it's good not to think of them as solid metal, cold, inanimate form, but as a living, breathing, awakened, enlightened mind. Okay, so that's why I like to use the image of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, because he is here with us, continually turning the wheel of Dharma. So we first call the image to mind. Think of the Buddha or the Dalai Lama, your spiritual mentor. Imagine the letter Hri at the center of the teacher's heart, made of light, radiating out in all directions, inspiring us to study and engage in the actions of the bodhisattvas, to aspire to becoming a Buddha ourselves. And we'll do our prayers. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. From the heart of the Lord of the Gandhan Devas emerges a brilliant white cloud like a great mass of fresh yogurt. Atop Sitsangkhapa, all-knowing King of Dharma, we request your coming to this place along with your great disciples. My Lord Guru is seated before me on a lion throne, lotus and moon cushion. His white face smiles blissfully. Please remain many eons and serve as a supreme merit field for the growth of my mind of faith and for the increase of Lord Buddha's teachings. Your omniscient wisdom mind encompasses all that is existent. Your speech is a profound teaching which ornaments the ear of the fortunate. Your body's beautiful radiance evokes admiration. I prostrate to you, Lama Tsongkhapa, who merely viewing, hearing, or contemplating earns one great merit. I present to you, supreme field of merit, Tsongkhapa, delightful offerings, pure sweet water, various flowers, fragrant incense, butter lamps, perfumes, and more, both physical and mental offerings, vast as the clouds and wide as the ocean. The unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind I have committed since beginning, especially actions contrary to my three vows, Vinaya, Bodhisattva, and Vajrayana, I regret extremely from the depths of my heart and reveal each and every such action. Let's stop here and work with that. So this is the limb of confession or purifying to help clear our mind so that we can be more present in all our actions and activities in life. So this one of confession then, it says, unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind I've committed, accumulated since time without beginning. So really thinking of over this lifetime activities and actions we have engaged in that were unkind, harmful to others, harmful to ourselves, that we want to clean up so that we can have a clear consciousness as we move forward through our lives. So Vinaya, Bodhisattva, Vajrayana are specific vows. Vinaya could be even those that you took when you took refuge vows, or just, you know, in a worldly sense, promises that you've made to your family, to your spouses, to your employers, and really looking carefully at those things so that they can be purified. And for those of you who have taken refuge, those would be the five precepts that you took when you took refuge of not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to commit sexual misconduct, and not to take intoxicants, things that cloud the mind and confuse you. So those are specific vows, but you might look at specifically where you have transgressed things that were cruel and unkind to others. So you can call to mind a specific event, maybe something that was heavy that happened a long time ago, or just looking at back over the past week, you know, where you might have said something that was motivated by impure thoughts. So you call the action to mind. You generate a sense of regret. Yeah? Regret, not guilt, but regret, where you see it as negative, see it as harmful and demeaning to yourself and to others. And then you declare it, you cut it open and declare it. Imagine sitting in front of your guru or the Dalai Lama and saying, no, this was really an unkind act that I engaged in, of body, speech, and mind, you know. And then make a promise not to engage in that action again, and for a specific amount of time, because you want to be successful in it, yeah. If you can say, I will never engage in that action again for the rest of my life, say that, yeah. If you can, if you're wanting to work on something that is just for that you feel like you can keep your promise for a week or a month, say that, you know. I promise to keep this pure for one whole week. And keep it, okay? This is one way to develop muscle, to develop strength in your capacity to keep your promises, to really clean up your act, to watch your actions of body, speech, and mind, and be much more cognizant of them. Okay, so let's sit for a moment and look at that. Call a specific action to mind. Look at who you were with, what was going on in your life, and recall what you did. Then you declare it. Imagine saying that before the Buddha, seeing that it was harmful to yourself and others. and then make a promise to keep your word for a specific amount of time, not to engage in that action again. And then think of some remedial action to engage in to bring your promise into the world of doing something beneficial for others. And let's recite that verse again. The unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind I have accumulated since time without beginning, especially actions contrary to my three vows, Vinaya, Bodhisattva, Vajrayana. I regret extremely from the depth of my heart and reveal each and every such action. We totally rejoice in your magnificent achievements, my Lord. You strove for knowledge and realization, abandoned the worldly concerns, and made the most meaningful use of human life with the 18 opportune conditions during these degenerate times. So let's look at that verse a little more carefully too. So rejoicing is one that just creates natural, spontaneous, automatic energy and enthusiasm in your life. So you might think of the excellent qualities of our late teacher Venerable Geshe Sultan Gelson's activities over this lifetime of his, where he just said, "I like LA," and he just taught here for decades. You know, just being here so stably for us over the decades. Think of the qualities and activities of our teachers and other beings in your life, friends that have really inspired you and encouraged you in spiritual practice, and rejoice in that. You know, rejoice in that, because that gives us energy and enthusiasm in our own practice. So think of that for a moment. Recite that verse again. We totally rejoice in your magnificent achievements, my Lord. You strove for knowledge and realization, abandoned the 8 worldly concerns, and made the most meaningful use of human life with the 18 opportune conditions during these degenerate times. Pray, all you holy gurus, unerring in conduct, precipitate a rain of vast and profound Dharma from the billowing clouds of wisdom and compassion which fill the Dharmakaya sky, providing for the field of disciples precisely what is needed. May the Vajra body, created from the purity of clear light, free from the rising and setting of cyclic existence, but visible to the ordinary viewer only through its unsubtle physical form, stay on unchanging without waning until samsara ends. So I just wanted to say that I received word from India saying that everything went really well in the cremation of Venerable Geshe-la's holy body, and that I had a short chat with Venerable Tartso, and she said that just the plane trip of getting Geshe-la's body from LA to Bangalore was 60 hours, 60. Okay, And so there are all these processes ahead of time, so days ahead, and then hours to get from the airport in Bangalore to the monastery. And Geshe-la's body was not embalmed according to the tradition that they chose, so it was, was it over 2 weeks? And Geshe-la's body did not smell at all, not at all. And the monks opened up the coffin to bathe Geshe-la's body and then to put the robes of a monk on it, on his body again. And Geshe-la's body had shrunken to almost to the size of a child. And they say that that's one of the signs of Geshe-la's attainments. Now, besides seeing the rainbow in the sky at the time of Geshe-la's passing, there was Geshe-la's body had also shrunk. And so the ceremony was conducted by Dzong Rinpoche, who is the reincarnation of Venerable Geshe-la's main teacher, main guru. And it was guided by Lati Rinpoche, one of Geshe-la's peers. And Lati Rinpoche has encouraged the group in India. The entire board went to India, encouraged them to request His Holiness to find the reincarnation of Geshe-la as quickly as possible. So they've been working on composing that. And so, you know, it's like, it's pray all you holy gurus, you know, requesting teachings, requesting them to remain with us and stay. And it's like Geshe-la's wish, even the day before he died, he was still saying, I need to live long for my students, not for myself. You know, this like really, really strong intention of, I need to be here for you. And so, you know, and I asked one of the Tibetan women, the families that went up, that had a chance to go and see Geshe-la, what he said to her. And he said, the doctors say there's no hope. Yeah, the doctors say there's no hope. But to us, he was always saying, I need to live long. I need to live long. Now, so it was really, really interesting. It's like Geshe-la had no depression, no sadness, but just, you know, it's like, I need to keep teaching for you. And it's like thinking of the support around the monastery, you know, and what Geshe-la had done in India was so much of the funding, you know, it's like people sometimes wonder, why isn't TDL bigger than it is? You know, it's like Geshe-la was sending all these funds to India, and he built a school for Indian blind children, and all these children showed up at the cremation. Geshe-la was feeding for years this old folks home, this people who had were really very poor, very poor, almost nothing, you know. But it's so beautiful. I've gone to visit this old folks home many times, and what they have is the Dharma. No, they're constantly doing the prayer wheels or their rosaries and chatting with each other, and they have the Dharma. They're not sad either, you know. And so all these old folks showed up at Geshe-la's cremation, and then also Geshe-la built, you know, latrines for a high school where they had really only broken toilets, water sealed toilets, and built a huge permanent canopy over a playground for children who in the monsoons had no place to go, you know. So all these kids came up, and then he was helping the Tibetan government in exile, so the Tibetan officials were also showing up, plus thousands and thousands and thousands of monks, you know. So Tartso's bringing the video footage back. She'll be back on the 5th. But, you know, you think about the activities of a teacher and what they engage in for the benefit of others, and, you know, or His Holiness. Yeah, March, and we were talking about this at meditation, you know, March 17th marks 50 years since the Dalai Lama walked out of Tibet. 50 years. And continually, non-stop, working for the benefit of others. So to think about how remarkable these teachers are to hang in there with us, you know, us fickle, fickle, transitory Dharma practitioners. We call ourselves Dharma practitioners, but we're much more fickle, really, you know. So to see, you know, when we make these prayers, it's like we're making the request that we can continually meet such inspiring teachers again and again, so that we have the courage to take up this attitude and intention and activity to work for the benefit of others, to attain enlightenment for the benefit of others, you know, no matter what gets thrown in our path en route. So to have the kind of courage to take up the path. Yeah. So let's read those two verses again. Pray all you holy gurus, unerring in conduct, precipitate a rain of vast and profound Dharma from the billowing clouds of wisdom and compassion which fill the Dharmakaya sky, providing for the field of disciples precisely what is needed. May the Vajra body, created from the purity of clear light, free of the rising and setting of cyclic existence, but visible to the ordinary viewer only in its unsubtle physical form, stay on unchanging, without waning, until samsara ends. May whatever merit we have gathered here beneficially serve all sentient beings and the Buddha Dharma, and especially may the essential teachings of the unerring master Tsongkhapa shine forever. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Losantrapa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Losantrapa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Losangdapa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. So for the next three verses then, the first one is you invite the image of your teacher to come and take the seat on your crown. So again, it's an image made of light, of your pure creative mind. So very tiny, you invite an image of the Buddha or the Dalai Lama to come to sit on the crown of your head. The second verse, then you imagine that the image then descends through your crown and down through your body, just flooding your body and mind with light, and then sits at your heart. And then the third verse, then it becomes inseparable with your mental continuum. Okay, so you create the kind of energy or closeness with your spiritual teacher. Glorious precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at my crown, and in your kindness please care for us. Bestow upon us the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. So take a moment to do that visualization. Glorious precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at our hearts, and in your great kindness care for us. Grant us your blessing for our temporal success and for the supreme attainment. So you imagine the image descends through the crown of your head, floods your body and mind with light and inspiration, and descends down to your heart level. Glorious precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at our hearts, and in your great kindness remain with us. Remain steadfast until we achieve the essence of enlightenment. So imagine the image becoming non-different than your own mental continuum. Unthinkable, inexpressible, wisdom gone beyond, unborn, unceasing, space-like in essence, clearly perceived by wisdom mind, homage to the mother of the Buddhas of the three times. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. So call to mind any understanding of voidness, of interdependent co-arising. We'll do the mandala offering. By the virtue of offering to you, assembly of Buddhas, visualize before me this mandala built on a base resplendent with flowers, saffron, water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon. May all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniyatayami. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dhamma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of using the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dhamma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dhamma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of hearing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Finish up the six causes and one effect that we've been working on for a few months. Sometimes these teachings are... Oh, okay. Yeah. we'll have the children's class. Sorry, thank you for reminding me. Do you want to go with him for a little while, or is he okay? Yeah, just so that they can feel comfortable. Yeah, you might. Do you want to go with her for a few minutes? Yeah, you can come back in when you're ready. Yeah, just so she feels comfortable. So I thought today we'd finish up the six causes and one effect, really the effect of cultivating the mind or the intention of bodhicitta. So today I also felt like it would be good for us to do some contemplation on it too, because really all the teachings, as Geshe-la has always said, are for contemplation and understanding, you know, not just to come to a lecture and to listen to some pretty words and then go home and forget about it, but to really use the teachings as something to contemplate. So I thought we would do a little bit of both today and work with that. So the six causes are prefaced by the view of equanimity. You know, thinking about how, in general, we tend to be inclined to some people and disinclined to others. That we have some favoritism or interest towards certain people, that we find them more pleasant to be around, that we enjoy their company, that they share the same views as us, and so we want to hang out with them. And then there are those that we don't want to be in the same room with. Right? So it's really looking at the fact, particularly, you know, this view of equanimity is to begin to calm our minds and to take a longer, broader view of things, because we tend to have a hard and fast and a very strong view about certain people and certain places and things that our bias just locks in, and we hold them to be really strongly that way all the time. But in fact, you know, if things are impermanent and we're constantly changing, well, so are they. So are the difficult people, and so are the people that we love. You know, you realize that our friends are not always our friends. Some have been our close friends our entire lives, but you look and see that changes too. Someone that you were close to 10 years ago may not be someone that you feel particular time or energy or interest to be with anymore. Now, and the same for someone that you disliked 10 years ago may be someone that you hang out with now. So just realizing that it is very tentative, and to kind of soften our grip on friend, enemy, and stranger. Yeah. So it also helps us to look at this view of rebirth, you know, that we have had many, many lives, and in those lives that we've had different views and different ways of holding things, yet there's a continuity of experience, and that what occurs now, the way we are now, and how we view things has been dependent on previous conditions. That cause and effect is definitely an action here as to how we move through our lifetime now, but in previous lives as well. So, you know, that in a previous life, we may have been somebody that we might not particularly like now. Yeah, interesting how to contemplate these things is quite awesome, but you know, it's to help us soften the heart a little bit, to soften our heart and to clear out our worries. And particularly with meditation, we're looking at these two aspects, you know, to watch that the mind doesn't go into agitation and just losing our mental clarity and awareness and focus, and then the opposite side of mental dullness, you know, where we again can't keep our focus because we're falling into sleep. Yeah, so it's like watching with this place of activity and concentration of your object of meditation. So this one of equanimity then is to look at how, you know, is it true that I've had a life before, and even more than that, I've had countless lives, you know? I've had countless lives, and thinking about how this particular life now is came about through causes and conditions. Okay? So you can work with that, and then also look at the three types of persons. Yeah, call to mind someone that you consider a friend. Call to mind someone that you consider an enemy, or someone that's really unpleasant and difficult to be with. And then call to mind a stranger, someone that you don't have much energy with, you know? And just look at how, well, that came about through causes and conditions too, and that's continually shifting, you know? So I love Thupten Chodron's analogy of looking at how, you know, if somebody gave you $100 today, yet they punched you in the face yesterday, is that your friend or your enemy? Yeah. And then if somebody punched you in the face today and yesterday they gave you $100, are they your friend or your enemy? Yeah, and see how it's continually shifting. In fact, you know, it's based on just this kind of changing, ebbing flow of activities that we engage in. No? So just observe so that you can soften this place and develop a little more equanimous mind towards everyone in your life. Okay, so let's sit for 10 minutes on this. Just first work with your breath. Notice if there's any tension or holding or pain anywhere in your body. And then sit with your back straight, your shoulders even, your head straight as well too. And then just gently go to the breath and breathe gently, evenly. And then when the mind is calm, then consider this situation of equanimity, yeah, not having such strong bias towards friend, enemy, and stranger. pursue this contemplation on equanimity is to help us kind of stretch out and expand our comprehension, our analysis, our consideration about dependent arising. Now, thinking about how who you are now came from causes and conditions. You know, how we view things, how we hold others, how we consider persons as friend, enemy, stranger, who we consider friend, enemy, stranger really also came from causes and conditions, you know, and then that is continually changing as well. So in looking at that, you know, you begin to loosen this grip on this hard view of who's who, but to think about how, you know, not only myself, but all beings are continually changing, our views are changing. No. So that's the preface to the first cause of developing bodhicitta, the first cause, which is that all beings have been my mother. Yeah, all beings have been my mother, which again, you know, I did a whole class on saying, isn't that a big leap from equanimity to all beings have been my mother? And so looking at that, the teachings say, well, every being has been my mother. Not only have they been my mother, but they've been my mother many times over, now many times. And so it's to help us again see our own mothers, you know, to consider our own mothers as not inherently existing as well, because we can hold very hard, strong views about our mothers, can't we? And to think that how, in fact, then, so all of us have had female form at one time or another. No, when we were doing the prayers upstairs for Geshe-la towards the end, somebody, not a monk, somebody put up a big sign on the door saying "monks only," and it wasn't a monk. You know, so I mean, I've been a nun for a long time, so I haven't seen this. Right, monks only inside. I thought, well, they've all been my mothers too. Yeah, they've all been, have had the female form in the past as well. So, you know, I mean, it was a small space and it was crowded. They had some function to perform, etc. And I brought it up, you know, I brought it up to one of the Tibetans and he said, oh, well, you could have gone in too. Yeah, you're a monastic, so you could have gone in. But, you know, it's like I wasn't going to step over that line. But it was interesting that, it wasn't the monk who put up the sign. And so to think about how, you know, in trying to develop this place of equanimity and love for all beings, then all these different things come up, you see. In just putting up that sign, there's like Vinaya, or the monastic order, and then the view about that. And you think in your own life around your family, your siblings, your heritage, your ancestry, your culture, your generation, your livelihood, your body, and the kind of work that you are involved in. Know that too. Then you're looking at how do we develop equanimity and love and understanding for all beings when there are these communication, cultural, generational, economic, and physical hurdles that we all develop this kind of bias or leaning towards certain things, you know? So for each of us, there's so many different hurdles to overcome when we're looking at trying to develop a place of equanimity and love. Okay? Do you get that? Yeah? I'm not... Okay, just wanting some feedback there, because it's looking at how to this view about reincarnation. That's one of the things too that we need to look at in our contemplation. yeah, for you to go home and think about, well, did I live before? No? And if I lived before, did I create the causes and conditions? They're saying that I created the causes and conditions for the kind of life and experience that I have now. So if that's so, then, you know, it's really quite remarkable to look at your own life. No, this is your product, your experience and world worldview that's come about through causes and conditions. So it's quite curious, you know, to use your body. It's like your body and your life becomes your experiment, you know, your adventure into really examining the teachings. Yeah, really checking and looking at how do these teachings work and how do they apply to me, and seeing that, you know? So all beings have been my mother, and then the next point is remembering the kindness of others. Okay, so the teachings work with particularly with mothers because of their generosity. And I wanted to read something from Yogi Chen. Yogi Chen, I don't know if he's around anymore. Has anybody heard of Yogi Chen? I'd been hearing about him early on. I finally met him in 1974, but he'd been this Chinese yogi who'd been living in this little room for years and years in Nepal. And then somehow he got transplanted to Berkeley. So I went to visit him. And he was living in a little room in Berkeley, you know? So I really wanted to see him. But this is something he wrote. In our mother's womb, from the initial stages of an oval spot and an oblong lump, the embryo has been built up in a special and gradual way by the nutritive essences of her flesh and blood. It has grown bigger by the nourishing properties of her food, and it has been produced through the endurance of all kinds of birth acts. So this is, you know, thinking of different kinds of birth, right? So animal, insect, bird, all kinds of different realms of existence, you know, the six realms, you think of different realms of beings. So even after birth, by nursing us from a tiny little infant to a big, strong person, she contributes to the form of our body. She goes through hardships for our sake, which means that she not only dresses and adorns us, but gives us her inheritance, keeping little of her own, not even a crumb, giving us all her food and drink, so that when we set out for foreign parts, we should not suffer from hunger and thirst, giving us cloths to keep out the cold and money to prevent our pining and poverty. She goes to the market or works in the fields day and night, with the coarse soil as her shoes, wearing the stars as her cap, riding her legs as a horse, using the woolen threads of her torn frock as a whip, offering her feet to the dogs. She gives whatever she has gained by her efforts to us. She loves the helpless baby more than she loves her own benefactors. She looks on her baby with eyes of love, wraps him in gentle warmth, dandles him on her knees, strokes him with her 10 little fingers, and calls him with words of sweetness. She took us on her lap, protected us from fire and water, knife and poison, held us back from precipices, removed what might harm us, made religious offerings for our well-being. She did things nobody else would even think of or could be enumerated, such as consulting astrologers, observing omens, reading the lines of our palm. If one individual were to transform all the earth, stones, trees, and sand of this world into single juniper kernels, another might well be able to finish counting them, but no one can count what his mother has done for him. In each life, one has at least one mother. We have transmigrated through many lives so that there is no one who was not our mother once or twice. This is why every sentient being has been our benefactor. So remembering the kindness of mothers. You know, I've been to prisons in LA a few times, and one time I went to see someone, and waiting to visit the person, I saw so many women there. You know, when you think of all our mothers, there's so many women there to go to take care of their husbands, their boyfriends, their children, and they'll do anything for you, you know. And to think about our actions and what we engage in to get ourselves in places that we do. Another time, Geshe Gelson was invited to a youth prison in downtown LA, and I went with him, and Geshe-la was sitting on the stage, and then he was going to speak to the hard, criminal, dangerous youth at this youth prison. You know, they have to keep them there until 18, and they started walking in chains. Now these huge, big men really, you know, still considered boys because they're 18 or younger, and chains, not only chains on themselves, but chains to the next person. They all came in wearing heavy chains, and they're all filing in, these young, vibrant, big boys, you know. And Geshe-la is sitting on the stage, and I can see these guys starting to smirk. You know, here's Geshe-la, this aging Asian man in a shawl and a skirt, right? And I'm going, oh man, what's Geshe-la gonna say? So Geshe-la gets up, and these guys are just looking at him like, yeah, what's this guy gonna say? And Geshe-la says, what are you doing here? He says, you don't want to be here. I don't want you to be here. Your mother doesn't want you to be here. What are you doing here? And it was just, you know, like the shift in these young men's faces. This, you know, Geshe-la was able to just reach out and connect to them so strongly, you know. And so, you know, remembering the kindness of our mothers, he's saying, your mother doesn't want you in here. It's really powerful. So looking at these, this connection of motherly love, and how important that is, you know, to connect and remember kindness of others. And think about how our actions influence others, you know, in our sphere of family and different friends. Our family will help us so much. Yeah, they'll bend their back so much until they can't anymore. You know, you look about at so many times that we've done things that have been embarrassing or are not very kind to our parents and members. Yeah. So another focus that we're looking at is how sometimes we didn't care for the ways that our mothers helped us. Yeah, that's a contradiction in terms, right? Our mothers are helping us, but we didn't like that they helped us. Yeah? So it's important to look at, you know, how Alex Berzin makes this comment that sometimes because we had challenging relationships with our mothers, they say, okay, then remembering kindness of our mothers, maybe focus instead on your fathers, or focus instead on somebody else, yeah, somebody that was a mentor to you. You don't have to work with your mother. But he said, well, there's good logic in that initially, but still, we need to go back to this place and resolve our unfinished business with our parents as well, and really think about how how our mental attitude towards our parents and how our parents related to us oftentimes had a very strong critical view in there. You know, again, thinking about communication, cultural, generational, economic, and physical needs of how we had these expectations and demands on our parents that, you know, they couldn't do for us. Or we wanted them to be perfect, but, you know, if everyone were perfect around us, how difficult and challenging would it be for us then, right? If they were all perfect and we weren't. Yeah. So to think about how, in remembering the kindness of our mothers, what were our expectations and judgments and demands upon them? Yeah. Okay, so we need to look at that to see, you know, to be realistic about the shortcomings of ourselves, of others. Yeah, mothers are just an example. Yeah, you're all my mothers. All of you have been my mothers, and you have been mother to all beings too. So, you know, to think about the kindness of others and be realistic about shortcomings, be careful and not ignore them, but really also remember, you know, that a big focus of this particular meditation is to cut through this hard, strong, grasping at solid existence, you know, that we remember that our mothers too are dependent arisings too. Yeah, our mothers came from causes and conditions too. Yeah, they're experiencing their. Are people starting to freeze in here? Yeah. yeah, if we could turn it down, or maybe turn it off for a while. Does anyone want to share from their own experience any burning examples? Yeah,
I mean, you know, talking about the equanimity, it's really good to realize that our own shortcomings is true, and also to have a good idea of reality. I've been here so many years, but I think of myself as Chinese. And then now I think, no, I'm not. I'm really American. and when I talk with the Chinese, they wonder why is it that it seems that I'm American. They said, oh, you're American. I said, before I said, oh, that's not true. I'm Chinese. Now I said, yeah, you're right. I am American. I'm American. That I have Chinese background, but I'm really American. I'm very happy with that. And that helps my equanimity now, to realize that it's fine. I can be bold, and I can accept them, and hopefully they'll accept me.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, to look at equanimity in the way that we have many labels of who we are, yeah? And people view us a particular way, and which is why, you know, we need to have equanimity and understanding of others, because we too develop kind of hardened views about everybody, and we label them. Once we label them, we solidly think that that's the way they exist, and that's the way we act towards them, you know. But this exercise is to help us slowly break through that and see that, know that we're many things, yeah, and we're not solidly independently existing in that particular way, yeah. So you might be Chinese to an American, or American to an American, you know. So we all have different perspectives and views as well, yeah. So right, so so let's sit with that for 5 minutes, okay? We'll sit with that for 5 minutes. Look at how, contemplate this. All beings have been our mother, Yeah, so think again of your friend, enemy, stranger as having, you know, this karmic experience now in this life as someone being considered the way they are, and then remembering the kindness of others. So you can think of the kindness of that friend, the kindness of the enemy. How has that enemy shown you kindness? Yeah? The kindness of the stranger. Okay, so we'll just sit for 5 minutes on that. Also look at communication, culture, generation, economic and physical perspectives that we kind of hold very strong and fast, but in fact it's continually changing too. So it's unrealistic to expect people to be perfect. Every one of us has good qualities and poor qualities, and so it's important for us to be realistic about shortcomings, you know, to really think about our relationship with others. So the next point is repaying kindness and developing wish, you know, first developing this strong understanding of the kindness of sentient beings, and then wishing to repay their kindness. There's a situation where in hospice, I went to visit this one woman, and she said, you know, my daughter brought me here from another state, and she put me here, and I don't know the places, I don't know where to go, I can't get around, and I don't, my daughter hardly comes to visit me anymore. So I called the daughter, and she said, yeah, in fact, that's true, but I've really, really been busy with cat rescue. And so I thought, just to try to be non-judgmental about what was going on. And her, you know, her mother was saying, I took care of my own mother when she was aging and sick, and in this, you know, this, my daughter hardly ever comes to see me. And I was thinking, you know, this is a condition that we've been creating as baby boomers. You know, as baby boomers, we've been putting our parents into homes, and I think that you know, there are these different conditions of loneliness and availability to the aging, and appropriateness in our actions toward them, and we too are creating causes and conditions for our own future. You know, it's quite a good experience, and I would encourage all of you to go and visit convalescent homes and retirement homes, and go and visit somebody, you know, and just give them some attention and love, because it's very much appreciated. They really are isolated. So, I don't know. Dana, you want to say something about that?
Good for you when you go do that.
It's good. Yeah. Yeah, you're saying it's good for you when you do it, to go and visit. So, yeah, okay. So, and in doing that, you know, it's like love arises naturally. And also for us, you know, and going back to this point of how we all have good qualities and bad qualities, when we're able to focus on the good qualities of others, then our mind becomes more inspired, we're more interested, we feel more joyful, we're not so blaming or resentful of others in our relationships, that if you focus on the good qualities of others, it does give us more good energy, you know? So in this balance of realizing that people have different qualities, it's important to watch from our own side. Yeah, from our own side, our minds are really grasping and holding on to people. And if we continually look at the downer parts of it, the negative sides of it, the things that they've done to us in the past, then our mind feels really negative, you know. So it's important to catch in our contemplations as we work on it. You know, it's our mental attitude and how we're trying to uplift ourselves too. Remember, this whole whole exercise is looking at cultivating the mind, wishing to attain enlightenment for the benefit of others. And so, no, it's like we need to direct ourselves and create a track so that we have that, you know, we have that inspiration to, rather than giving up on sentient beings and wishing to just attain liberation for ourselves, you know, wanting to get out of samsara ourselves. So the next point then is great love. And then the fifth point is great compassion. So with great love, we looked in the past at wishing for others to have happiness, and particularly the causes of happiness. You know, how do sentient beings create the causes for happiness? Because, you know, people, again, we're all developing things through cause and effect, right? Through causes and conditions. So in other words, if we're wanting to cultivate happiness, we need to create the causes to accumulate that. And how can we help others develop those causes? You know, how do we help others to do that? It's through showing them through our actions, through teaching, through our conduct, yeah, and then working that way. Great compassion is the wish for freedom from suffering and its causes. And in this one, you know, we need to particularly acknowledge our own suffering. Yeah? First, we need to acknowledge that we ourselves have suffering. Because if we're not in touch with our own suffering, then it's difficult and really impossible for us to have compassion and equanimity for others. So when we can develop an understanding of our own suffering, you know, looking at our own condition, then we develop renunciation and a wish to be free from our own suffering. So would someone like to volunteer looking at the three kinds of suffering?
The suffering of change and pervasive suffering.
Okay, do you want to give an example of each of those?
The suffering of suffering is pain, physical pain. You have a headache, you cut yourself.
Okay.
You have a disease.
Physical pain, yeah, outright suffering. Okay, suffering of change.
The suffering of change is something that's so pleasurable, but if you were to do it forever and ever, it would become unpleasurable. It can be pleasurable to sit and meditate, and after a few hours, it's going to become unpleasant.
Right. Sitting at first is pleasant, and it can become unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. And pervasive suffering, that's a tough one.
Okay.
That is just our general human condition in samsara.
Okay. Our condition in samsara, but why is it suffering? Does someone want to share and assist in that? Noel.
Alex Rosen calls it uncontrollable rebirth.
Uncontrollable rebirth. Yeah, unenlightened existence. Okay, but what about now? Even in this body. I'm sorry? We have ignorance. I'm sorry?
We don't remember that's what causes the suffering.
We don't remember that that's the cause of our suffering. It's still not making me feel like I want to develop any renunciation. Mimi?
Well, just because of our body, that we have all the nervous system and everything.
Uh-huh.
When the temperature changes, then we're suffering. But it's not because of the temperature so much as our body's reaction to it. And so just because we're born as a sentient being, we have a result of suffering, of official admission. One time he's trying to get it to me, but I didn't understand it. This is like if this breeze comes to you and gives your body the feeling a certain way, that's pervasive suffering because it's your body that's reacting to it.
Uh-huh.
constantly in a state of delusion.
Right.
And just always doing that, even if we think we're not doing it.
Well, and that delusion prevents us from really acquiring the things we want, like connecting with other people. Almost any goal, we're off, even if it's by like a couple of, you know, little degrees. I mean, I think that's the suffering. It's I want to connect with you, but I have to do it in a particular way, and so it can't happen. You know, I have the desire, but I'm off by, you know, 2 degrees to the left, 2 degrees to the right, and you're just chasing these things around, and you're never satisfied.
Yeah, never satisfied. Right. This whole discontent of samsara, right? By thank you for your comments. Is really looking at how suffering of change is our worldly happiness. You know, which is pretty much what we stay in. We kind of stay in that mode endlessly. You know, just looking for the next happiness and avoiding the suffering, yeah, running after the next happiness, avoiding the next suffering. And this one of pervasive one is the wisdom and conviction, you know, in this great compassion, is developing the wisdom and conviction that we can actually become liberated from the pervasive suffering. Yeah, do you believe that? Do you believe you can actually get out of pervasive suffering? Can you? No? Okay, so talk to each other for a moment. Talk to each other, yeah? Do you have the conviction to get out of that we have the wisdom to be liberated from samsara? Okay, so find a partner and talk with them about it. And how are you going to do it? Hello? Here, you can talk with him. Yeah, you can talk with him. Yeah. You can talk with her. Please, don't just sit there. Talk to somebody. Erin, do you want to talk with her behind you? Yeah, there are three of you. So, yeah. Answer?
Yes.
All right, let's hear it. Hello, hello. Let's finish up. Okay, let's hear your Yes, and what's the possibility? What? How?
Practice.
Practice? Practicing the Dharma?
Study.
What part of the Dharma? Yeah.
Well, I know, you know, from my own experience, and this is the same way I got it, that I did pick up. From my own experience, when I was younger, I had some really, some difficulties, you know, that made it impossible for me to see, you know, how I was or how I affected other people.
So it was hard to see how you were and how you affected the lives of others,
yeah, sure,
when you were young. Uh-huh.
And what I was doing, you know, on my own. And what helped me to make that change was focusing on other people. So the key to getting out of that particular cell was focus on others.
Key to getting out of that was focusing other people. Very good. Any other comment? How'd the monastics do? Yeah. Okay, you want to share?
Yes. I'd like to share something. Now, what I understand is, I might be jumping off the deep end by saying this, but the Buddha said all attachment brings suffering.
All attachments bring suffering?
A basis of all suffering.
Uh-huh.
So an attachment, it has duality. So you like something, you don't like something.
Mm-hmm. So, attachment has duality, yeah. Okay.
And being at the basis, and it just blossoms out from there.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's a big step, yeah.
Also, he said, touch it before you can see the engagement as body, actually.
Venerable's comment was looking at what transformed, you know, from Geshe-la's body here with us before, and then, you know, at the time of his passing, there's this brilliant rainbow, and then what occurred to his body, and, you know, now the request from the Dalai Lama to have Geshe-la come back. You know, it's the bodhisattva intention to come back to benefit beings. You know, it's like the bodhisattvas do not reside in solitary peace, but they choose to reincarnate and come back again and again until samsara is liberated. No, so whether we can have Geshe-la come back again, you know, Tenzin Dorje was saying too that we need to really see, you know, let Geshe-la have the most excellent education and excellent teachers again, so that he can continue on with his work. Yeah. So particularly thinking about this has to go really into the emptiness teachings, to the teachings on voidness, that there is no independent, inherent, permanent self-existence of ourselves or anyone. So this particular teaching then just helps us loosen that strong self image and self-interest and self-cherishing, you know, and realize that our body came from others, our mental states really came from others, and it's looking at how do we cultivate the most excellent qualities and purify and let go of and eradicate the negative ones. And realizing too, you know, a one view of emptiness is this Buddha nature quality, that we all have the seed of enlightenment, that we all can attain enlightenment because we are also empty of any permanent inherent self-existence. So we're cultivating the conditions to create those excellent causes, you know. So anyway, the sixth point is exceptional resolve. It's called laksam, exceptional resolve, that, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama calls it universal responsibility. Geshe Gelson used to call it extra thoughts. you know, but it's all altruistic intention that, you know, like Jeff was saying, you know, the real switch came from such self-interest into really thinking about others. And when you think about others, it begins to cut through the sense that everything that I do is for me, you know. Who cares what my actions are like as long as it's going to benefit me? But if we misunderstand that, we realize that all our good qualities and all the things that we accumulate and experience with, you know, that we find pleasurable came from others. No, it came from others. So anyway, the result is, you know, six causes, one effect. The effect is bodhicitta, you know, this mind of enlightenment. And particularly that these causes, you know, the six causes were looking more specifically at conventional or relative bodhicitta. The ultimate bodhicitta would be the teachings on voidness, emptiness. So so we'll stop here. I'm sorry I've gone over. We'll do the dedication of merits. Ian, you want to show everybody what you did? Ian, you want to show people what you did? Hold up your picture. Hold it up. Hold it up so people can see. Whoa, very good. Yes, thank you, it's a Bodhi leaf. Yeah, and you, do you want to show yours? Do you want to show yours? Whoa, it's a conch shell. Very good, thank you. And thank you, Pam, for leading the class today. Okay, so we'll do the dedication of merit. So again, like Geshe-la always says, you know, dedicate our merit to our enlightenment, right? Virtuous actions always lead to happiness, yeah? But this is like samsaric happiness that we experience. But if you dedicate it towards your enlightenment, to understanding and cultivating both the relative and ultimate view of bodhicitta, yeah, that we attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Because of these merits, may we quickly become Guru Lord Buddha and lead each and every sentient being into his enlightened realm. May the precious bodhicitta that has not yet been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. May the precious view of emptiness, shunyata, that has not been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. By virtue of assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base resplendent with flowers, saffron water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as the sun and the moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamliya Tayami. In the land of snowy mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. Lord Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, may you stay until samsara ends. And let's just say a few Om Mani Padme Hum mantras. For the quick return of Venerable Geshe Soltam Gelson, the quick return prayer has already been written by Lati Rinpoche, and we only have the phonetics yet, so Tenzin Dorje is working on the translation. We should have that soon. And also for Sharon's mom, who's in the hospital, and also for Ray, who's been handing out the prayers. Ray's not here today. He's in a convalescent home. So if anyone wants to visit him, I'll give you the address. But let's say some mani mantras. Okay. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum, 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 to imagine that the mantras and prayers go out to all beings everywhere with the wish that suffering be eliminated, that wisdom and love, compassion be generated, and that all beings can attain enlightenment. Okay, thank you. So we'll do our bows. Thank you.